Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by Hulu. I've been a longtime Hulu user. I'm watching Seinfeld on there every week for my recap. So many great shows on Hulu, like Handmaid's Tale and much more. If you don't know Hulu, Hulu has a new look and a new experience. You can watch everything all in one place, like Handmaid's Tale, Harlots, Casual, full seasons of Fargo, Blackish, Empire, Fear the Walking Dead, Nashville, all exclusively on Hulu, plus over 20 episodes of the Survivor back catalog as well. And there's now a new option to add live TV, so get ready to transform the way you experience television. Hulu with Live starts at $39.99 a month, which includes the limited commercials Hulu streaming plan, which includes 50-plus live and on-demand channels. Watch sports, including ESPN and FS1, including regional sports, news, and other can't-miss events. Perfect for MLB baseball and the NBA finals. Record live TV as well with Cloud DVR. 50 hours of storage are included, with the option to upgrade to 200 hours. So enjoy all your TV in one place with the brand new Hulu experience. Go to Hulu.com to start your free trial today. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here for a special edition of the podcast as we look back at why the winner won. How much did they follow to the letter of the law, the rules that were written by this man, who also will tell us why five other people didn't win? Here is David Bloomberg. David, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good, David. Have you shaken off your Survivor finale hangover yet?
Yeah, that was a very busy night for me. Anyone following me on Twitter saw that I also had my son's final ever high school baseball game that had a total of an hour rain delay in there while I'm waiting to get back to watch Survivor.
Yeah.
And then rushed back and, you know, got through Survivor. And so, yeah, it was a heck of a night.
That is one heck of a night. So what do? You just sort of like go into media blackout and don't check your phone or anything like that, and then start the whole thing when you get there? Or are you sort of like watching it like in between?
No, I do media blackout. As of 7 o'clock, I don't look at Twitter and hope that no one ats me with any spoilers, which did actually happen with Andrea when she was voted out, because, you know, in that double episode there, I was a half hour late due to a different baseball game and a dust storm that took out the highway. So I had to take back roads. So, you know, Central Illinois, a very interesting place.
Okay. Always. That's always the case. All right. So, David, a lot of stuff to get into from the finale. Overall, were you happy with the finale?
Yeah, I think it went well. And, you know, there were not too many huge surprises. There was obviously advantage Geddon, but we kind of all saw that coming, didn't we? So, yeah, I liked the way it ended. I liked the reunion. So it was a solid night of TV.
So, David, a lot of stuff to get into, and I don't know if we should mess around too much before we start to talk this through. So just get us into the format of how we're going to try to do this. Of course, last season I had no voice when we tried to do this, so this should be a lot easier in general. But how are we going to address our winner and our five non-winners today?
Well, I do have a couple of preliminary things, but once we get through those, we'll just go through each of the rules like normal. Different times, we've done it a little differently. But in this case, I think just following the rules along and discussing all of them at the same time makes the most sense. So to deal with those preliminaries, I do want to talk about, you know, during and after the finale, we got a number of answers to questions that have come up throughout the season. For example, you raised the question about why Sandra was saying that Brad had her back, while Sierra said she had to talk Brad out of targeting Sandra in the combined tribal council. And we found out the answer is a simple one, which was, well, basically Brad was pulling the wool over Sandra's eyes. He did have some sort of pregame alliance with her, but apparently that happened via text message and he didn't really know her all that well. And so he was willing to break that alliance. So that's why you had those two interviews saying completely different things.
And where was that from? That was from one of Brad's exit interviews?
Yeah. Yep. I can't remember which one, but yeah, he talked about that there. So it, you know, Sierra's interview was closer to canon than Sandra's was. And, you know, then, of course, there was something else from last week where I predicted Sarah would win. And, you know, we talked about that. And you said, I believe, that if Culpepper could Mike Holloway this thing, you thought the jury would reward him with the win.
I felt good about that. Yeah.
Yeah, you did. I mean, you were right about him Holloway-ing it. I was saying, no, there's no way that's going to happen. And he did. But hey, the jury did not reward the immunity wins.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, we had seen that happen in Survivor Worlds Apart. And then we had also seen that happen in the most recent season of Big Brother Canada. But I guess that the jury is not necessarily going to reward that. I had sort of been up to thinking, like, in these different seasons where you have somebody, you know, Joey Amazing is there and you know, he's at final eight, final nine. They're like, well, if he can win out, you would think that the jury is to say, okay, let's just give it to him. But no, you know, that's not always the case.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we'll get to the reasons why, you know, other questions. Did Sarah win because she played like a criminal? Did Brad lose because of that one bad decision, as Jeff Probst suggested? I hesitate to even include Cerie in this discussion because she wasn't even voted out. It was more like why Cerie got screwed. But we'll answer all of that and more as we figure out why Sarah won and Cerie, Aubrey, Ty, Troyzan, and Brad lost.
All right, David. Rule number one, scheme and plot. And you would have to think that our winner certainly did. And I also feel like that most of our losers also did.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, it's funny because the best thing that I've seen on Twitter in a long, long time was blogger Sarah Channon's Lego setup. You know, she does these little Lego designs for the show, showing Tony hiding in his underground spy bunker and giving Sarah advice throughout the game. And I mean, she posted that recently and I just laughed because it was not only funny, but it seemed very accurate in many ways because Sarah clearly modeled her strategic game on the one that Tony played. And, you know, obviously she did it well.
Mm-hmm.
She came into the game as someone who played honestly the first time around. And as she said in some interviews, most people don't change much between their seasons, something that we've certainly seen. I mean, you know, look at Ozzy throughout his four seasons. But Sarah changed her game up completely, starting on day one, as this rule advises, when she got together with Cerie. And she felt Cerie was going to be loyal to the end, in part because Sarah had that reputation as someone who would do the same. And she was right. I mean, one reason Cerie's game blew up was because she was going so far out of her way to try to save Sarah. So, you know, that was a good choice right at the beginning. And then other parts of her game started right away as well, even if we didn't necessarily get to see it because of the way the immunity wins were so lopsided. But she made relationships with, you know, a ton of different people and was close to almost everyone. And, you know, beyond that, she was willing to go above and beyond the normal scheming and plotting. We heard how she swore on her child's life. We didn't see it, but we heard about it from several players. Near the end of the game, she even got Brad and Troyzan to trade collateral items. Mm-hmm. When she gave them a bracelet that she said meant the world to her. And she got a bracelet from Troyzan and Brad's wedding band in return. And, you know, the best part, I think, was that she knew going into the deal that, well, she could always get a new bracelet if she decided it would be best to break the deal with them. But she knew there was no way Brad was going to swear on his, basically swear on Monica and hand over the wedding ring and then, you know, break his vow, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Sarah has been very forthright in her thoughts about her own game, saying things in interviews like, I had the game by the throat the whole time. She has said she never felt in danger, and it wasn't due to luck. She planned for it. She studied the possibilities. She determined what her best move was. You know, she said, you have to strike first in this game. And she's right. You have to know when the right time is. That's something that we've discussed multiple occasions, that someone goes too early or too late, but she seemed to always know when the time was right. And, you know, much like Tony, sometimes, you know, we were on the outside looking in thinking, oh, you made the wrong decision there, but we didn't have all the information that she had. And, you know, as Zeke said in the final tribal council, that Sarah always voted the right way because she always knew the right way to vote because she was always directing the way to vote. Now, that last part I'm going to say is not quite 100% correct, which we'll get to in the third rule, but it's close enough. And, you know, once Sarit was gone, the tide on the jury was heavily favoring Sarah because she was behind everything and responsible for everyone being on the jury, and they all knew it.
Yeah. I don't like the part about how she doesn't say that anything had to do with luck. I believe that every Survivor winner, from the best of the best to the certainly worst of the worst, has a lot to do with luck. There's so many things that you can't control what's going on. So I feel like that maybe that might just be a little bit of a defensive posture to say that nothing had to do with luck. Maybe for Sarah might be feeling like that there are some people who aren't giving her enough credit, and if she talks about luck, then that sort of like gives people an in. But I don't think it takes anything away from what she was able to accomplish to say. And also, you know, the bounce of the ball went her way a bunch of times also. I think that every Survivor winner has things that they ended up getting lucky on.
Yeah, the way I interpreted it when she said that wasn't so much that she was saying there was no luck involved, but rather that she had planned for multiple outcomes. So if the ball bounces left, you do this thing. If the ball bounces right, you do the other thing, you know, because obviously luck is going to be somewhat involved. I mean, even when she got the vote steal and, you know, yes, it was her observational skills that allowed her to see it, but it was also her luck that Michaela didn't look down.
Right.
Because if Michaela had simply looked down, then Sarah never would have had the opportunity.
Right. And I think that the great Survivor player is able to, you know, maximize what comes up when they get lucky and then ultimately parlay that. And then also when the bad breaks go their way, they're also able to sort of minimize the damage that happens to them as well.
Right. Right. Exactly.
All right.
So as for the others in the final three, Brad was, well, obviously the more active one. Early in the game, we saw him strategizing and, in the words of a tweet from Gervais, quietly pulling strings.
Gervais.
As opposed to yes, yes. We dig deep here. He said that Brad
is that
was quietly
the Spradlin-esque pronunciation?
Oh, is it? Oh, it's Jervis. Sorry. Sorry, Jervis.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Sometimes I just say these things, you know.
Yeah.
So Jervis said that Brad was quietly pulling strings as opposed to yanking the shit out of them like he did in Blood versus Water. And I'd say that was a pretty accurate representation. Steven said, did I get that right, Steven?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Steven said in his week two blog, and others said as well, that Brad realized that the best way to drive strategy is to be the central spoke around which everyone else revolves. At the time, I was thinking back to Brian Heidek for this strategy. And, you know, Brad was using that to keep people like Debbie and Ty and all the rest close to him. Indeed, Brad said in a web confessional at the time that he had a lot of tentacles out there, so he didn't need to be involved in every conversation. And those who were involved came and reported back to him. I think we even discussed that at the time. This strategy certainly has its upsides, the biggest of which is that it's obviously much more difficult to get blindsided. But I would say a problem with it is that not everybody thought he was all that involved because he was working through other people. For example, Sierra said in the final Jury Speaks video that since she played closely with Brad, she knew that she did most of the work and he coattailed her. Now, this is obviously a different story from what he told you on the red carpet. So, you know, I'm not sure which of these is canon here. You know, both of them were putting themselves at the center of that wheel there.
From the outside looking in, I definitely feel like that there was a lot of evidence about Brad's scheming and plotting from the pre-merge in the post-merge stuff. I think we have to rely a little bit more on the hearsay, but sure, I buy it. Brad did a great job of getting to 39 days. He schemed and plotted for sure.
And then there's Troy Zan. He said in a web confessional that he was keeping a low profile to avoid being seen as a threat. I'd say he definitely succeeded there. Mm-hmm. He also claimed that he was strategizing every day in small ways. He told Josh that despite the fact that we didn't see him, he was constantly strategizing, talking to people all the time. And in another web confessional, He said that he knew others were building a resume of things they could claim credit for while he was playing more quietly in the background, and he thought people would vote for him because they liked him. Obviously, that last part was a misconception for him. But also, what he says about his own strategizing contradicts what the other players have said, both in the Jury Speaks videos and in interviews, which is that they felt he was basically doing nothing. I think Ozzy summed up their opinions about Troyzan in one of the last Jury Speaks videos, in which he said that Troyzan played a game barely worth mentioning and, quote, he's delusional if he thinks he can get a vote. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, those are Ozzy's words, not mine. So, you know, Troyzan, don't come after me.
Well, you're already blocked by Troyzan, right?
Yes, okay, I am.
So, I mean, what's he going to do now? Well, what I would say is that I don't know if necessarily if Troyzan did a bad job in terms of what he actually did strategically, but what it definitely seems is that he didn't do a great job of making sure people knew whatever he was doing was being done by him. You know, there's a little bit of a sweet spot between taking too much credit for the moves of saying like, hey, I pulled off that big move and being the target, and then having, you know, no blood on your hands, but also none of the credit for the things that are happening in the game.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, between the first and second rule, that's actually discussed. But I mean, yeah, there's a sweet spot, and he was way on the low end of it. If everybody who talked about it said he was basically doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, and maybe that's why he's been upset, is that he felt he really was doing things and it wasn't on TV. And the jurors said, we didn't see you doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of wanted that to be shown, to say, look, I was out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can only go with what they've said and what's been shown. Yeah. And
but in his mind, just to be fair to Troy, I think that what he was hoping for there was that, boy, Brad has pissed a lot of people off. I know Sarah's got a lot of blood on her hands. So if you go into it based on who do you like, hey, you're going to give the money to Brad, who, you know, he's got all this money already from being a football player and a lawyer, and he pissed a bunch of people off. And Sarah, yeah, she stabbed everybody in the back along the way. And, you know, on the other hand, here's Troyzan, who, you know, I did stuff. And we had a great social relationship the whole time. So why don't you vote for me?
It's a theory. It didn't work out for him.
It didn't work out. But I'm just like, you know, in terms of like the logic of what he's thinking, I think that that's about it.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, you know, since we're still just discussing Rule 1 in particular, he just didn't show it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for someone, I think, to give a vote to someone who wasn't seen as doing essentially anything in the strategy realm. I'm not saying it'll never happen or never has,
mm-hmm.
because it certainly has happened. But especially for this group, I just don't think they were going to reward that.
And certainly, I think he came off as a second banana to Brad. I mean, had Brad gone out at 4 and it was like Ty, Sarah, and Troyzan, then I think that probably you could have seen Troyzan get the Debbie vote, get the Sierra Dawn Thomas vote. So I think that in his alliance, I think he was seen as more of a lieutenant to Brad. But maybe he ends up getting some of those votes if Brad's not there.
Yeah, maybe. So getting back to the rule for the other three players from the finale, I would say that each of them knew in their own way the importance of scheming and plotting. You know, Ty is not usually viewed as a strategic master, I would say. But he did say during the game, this is a game of deceit, a game of lying. Everybody does that. I think the problem there was that he knew it, but he's just not built for it. That said, I do want to give him props for knowing when he didn't need to use his idols, because each week I would look ahead and I thought certainly he would use one of those idols just to make sure he was safe. And then each week he sat there as his name was thrown around, but he never needed to use one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did he know? He said he worked closely with Sarah and he trusted her, and that worked to his advantage. You know, Aubrey had a great strategy, I think, coming into the game to shield herself with threats. Unfortunately, she picked Tony as the main threat to pal up with initially. And of course, Tony was Tony. He went crazy, and that left people feeling like she had some of his bad mojo left on her. And it also didn't help that Sandra, the other main threat she wanted to align with, wanted literally nothing to do with her because Sandra was too worried about Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Aubrey did what she could. She played from the bottom, pushing her way into whatever cracks she could find. And I think she played her heart out, moving around strategically as much as she could, given her situation.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great stuff with Aubrey coming up in my interview that I did with her over the weekend. I'm going to have that up for you guys on Tuesday. She talked about how even on day 35, people were saying, yeah, but you were working with Tony. You know, so it was still a thing that haunted her throughout the whole game, and not in the good way that Tony's force ghost ended up haunting Sarah, that she was still, people were saying like, oh, I don't know if we can trust Aubrey because she worked with Tony.
Yeah, like I said, that bad Tony mojo.
Mm-hmm.
See, even when he was out of the game, he was in the game.
Every time but I think I'm out, David, they keep pulling me back into the game.
I hope they pull him back in one more time at least.
I hope so.
As for Ciri, well, I'm going to quote some from my article on why Ciri lost in Heroes versus Villains from over 7 years ago.
Okay.
At that time, I said, Ciri was very well acquainted with the first rule. She knew darn well this was more important than anything else and was even cited in the rule as a prime example due to her play in her first season. And indeed, I do still have the example from her first season in the rule, which notes, Ciri showed that making alliances immediately is more important than anything when her tribe chose to keep her and her fear of leaves over somebody who could help them build shelter, start fire, get food, etc. So adding to this, back in my article on why Ciri lost Micronesia from over 9 years ago, I noted that she was either directly participating in strategic moves or directing others in how to make the moves. But this season, Ciri was not as obviously scheming and plotting as we might have expected. She explained in interviews that she knew the eyes were on her, and if she ever did something a little off, everybody would have seen the strategy queen for who she was. I think she told you on the red carpet that she had to shrink down a bit and still be part of the votes without standing out as the one leading them. So she clearly knew the importance of scheming and plotting and strategizing, but she had to be a little quieter in doing so, so she could avoid becoming a target. And she clearly managed to avoid it. I doubt she would have made it through the next vote if she hadn't fallen prey to Advantage Geddon. But with Ciri, you just never know.
I mean, I don't know if there's anybody who's questioning whether Ciri was scheming and plotting throughout this right. whole way. I think that we could just, like, on this one say, yeah, it was Ciri. She was fine. She was scheming and plotting. No need for the, you know, to question it.
Well, now you say that after I, you know, talked about it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But yeah, she still deserves her due. Give her her standing ovation. Before we head to the second rule, I did want to note something as a follow-up to a discussion we had last week when we talked about checking in on your allies. Might have been 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But one thing that came up, both in a web confessional from Brad and in an interview with Andrea, is the importance of the check-in. Brad said he did it every day with his allies to tell them, you know, they're good, they're solid. And we also heard that both Sarah and Ciri did very well in terms of checking in with their allies as well. So I think it's just something in general that good players do. And since we had mentioned it, I just wanted to bring it up one more time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got to love the check-in. It's good. Always be checking in.
Yes.
All right. So, David, rule number two is to not scheme and plot too much. Keep your scheming secret and don't backstab until you need to. How did our winner, Sarah, fare with this?
Well, you know, interestingly, I'm going to lump them all together here okay. because I don't think any of the final six really had a huge problem with scheming and plotting too much. You know, Sarah could have. But she kept it under control, and you know, like Tony before her, she got away with it. The only significant violation I can identify was that Brad and Troyzan were too obviously a duo. And even that didn't stop them from making it to the end together, though I would say that was mostly because Brad kept winning immunity and Troyzan was good jury bait. But still, nothing happened because of it, so out of the six of them, I'd say they pretty much all upheld the second rule.
Yeah. All right. Well, good job by everybody there on rule number two. Good job across the board. What about Ty, though, in terms of, you know, there were many players who ended up getting upset with him about how he went back and forth. He sort of got blown up in the first part of the finale where his plot to take Sarah out sort of got exposed in front of everybody. Do you factor that under this rule?
I guess I could, but I see that more in the emotional and social game aspect of it. I think we'll address it there. But yeah, certainly he had his issues, but it wasn't like he was scheming and plotting too much as part of some strategy like, oh, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to zig, then I'm going to zag. It was more, oh, I'm going to go with them because they're my friend. Oh, wait, no, this person's my friend, too.
Mm-hmm.
Type of thing.
All right, David. So then let's go on to rule number three, to be flexible. I certainly think that Sarah was very flexible along the way, considering that she went back and forth between the two sides a number of different times this season.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You know, she told you on the red carpet that this season she learned she had to be more adaptable and not put her foot down like she did with Chaos Cass. And she also said that if someone else wanted to take the lead, she let them because she was still in on the decision and not standing out as the head of the alliance. And that last part is the one small quibble that I had with Zeke's statement that I mentioned in the first rule. She wasn't always directing the way to vote, but she was always in on it and knew how the vote was going to go. And really, Zeke himself getting voted out is a perfect example of that. Sarah didn't push for it or direct it, but she also didn't stand in the way. She was flexible enough to realize that she needed to save her own game, and that wasn't a place where, like she said, she should put her foot down.
Mm-hmm.
In a web confessional, Sarah said her tactic was to get in good with everyone. She saw people still sticking with the same groups, even though the game had changed, and thought they were fools to not venture out and try to pull in new people. Some players were comfortable with the three or four they had and wanted to ride it out, which she realized was good for her because she was in each of those groups of three or four and therefore could decide which way she wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sarah said she'd work with whoever was best for her. And if it changed the next day, well, then it changed the next day. And really, this is the epitome of following this rule. Over and over throughout the years, I have had to lecture about how a player shouldn't tie himself or herself to a single alliance. Sarah saw that and she acted on it. She knew you don't do that. And she saw the other players doing it and knew, whoa, that's the wrong thing to do.
I mean, it really is amazing when you take a look at the 13 people that made the jury. I mean, take Sarah herself out of it. And when you look at the other 12 people that are out there, I mean, I think she kind of has like a one-on-one relationship with every single person there. I don't know if she had, no, I was going to say Michaela, but I think that, you know, she ends up, she's working with Michaela at some point. I think Haley is the only person that we don't really see Sarah bonding with, who happens to be the first person to go out at the merge. And at one point or another, she's working closely with every single one of those people. And they're saying, hey, Sarah is my closest ally. I really feel tight with Officer Sarah.
Right. Yeah. And she had no problem bouncing among all of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's uncanny.
Well, I was going to try and make it un-Tony, but it's purely Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But even Tony did not have like a one-on-one relationship necessarily with every single person. You know, he did not care for Morgan. I think that Tasha ends up voting with him at one point, but it's not like that every single person that's there in the merge, like there's no interaction really between Tony and Jeremiah to the point where he's like, who's Jeremy? So Sarah actually, I think, does a better job than Tony on that front.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And we'll get to that in a couple of the later rules. But I'm just saying in terms of being flexible and, you know, bouncing around between them.
Sure.
She certainly followed his lead.
Sure. But just in terms of like her social game and the bonds that she had with people,
right.
Almost every single person. I mean, you watched all those secret scenes. They were all talking right. about how, you know, I'm very close with Sarah. You know, Sarah is like my ace in the hole. Everybody seemed to think that.
Right. And that's what initially led me to believe she'd make it to the finals and not get votes, because I thought they were all going to turn on her. But, you know, we'll get to that later, obviously. But that was my thinking when I watched that was, oh, this is not looking good for her.
Just to add to that, like, I know that there are some people who also get on, oh, the edit, you know, we were really, you know, had Sarah shoved down our throat at different points this season. I mean, this is stuff from Secret Scenes that we're talking about. So it's not stuff that was put out there by the show in terms of like trying to create a narrative. Almost every single person, and we're kind of saying that every single person after Haley is saying how they're really tight with Sarah.
Right, exactly. And the same thing came up in the Jury Speaks videos, too. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely was helping to figure out what was going on there.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about the people that were not as, I was going to say lucky, but I don't want to insult Sarah, but the people who did not execute as well on this front?
Well, I think this is a major point of contrast between her game and the game that Brad and Troyzan played, mm-hmm. because they were locked in. They were the type of people she was talking about. We heard from multiple other players how Brad, in particular, wouldn't even consider reaching out to someone who was in the opposing alliance. And that's a good way to kill your own game. For Troyzan, he was apparently, well, riding Brad's coattails from what we could see. And he said in interviews after the show that he would have considered voting out Brad if it was right for him to do so. But obviously, we never saw anything like that actually contemplated. As for the other three, they all showed their flexibility. You know, like I said, Ty liked everyone and hated having to turn on anybody. But at least he was working with different people. Aubrey was certainly willing to work with just about anyone, considering she was on the bottom for most of the game. And Ceri had both main alliances and side alliances, as any good player should have. So really, the ones that didn't adhere to this rule were Brad and Troyzan.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They seemed like they really wanted to get Michaela out. They didn't really want to work closely with them. That's probably more Brad than Troy. Michaela, in her exit interview with me, said that she was pretty tight with Troy. I mean, if there were people like forcing the two sides, it was definitely, you know, Brad and Troy on the one side. And then I think that, you know, even Ceri and Michaela and even Andrea and potentially Aubrey, you know, talking about the other side. Although Aubrey, I think, did consider voting with Brad and Troy. So I'll take her out of that equation for this time being.
Yeah. And, you know, voting as a side did help Brad earlier because I expected those original tribes to break up. I didn't expect the original alliances to hold. And I remember earlier in the season, I was actually crediting Brad with being able to keep that group together as a unified front. So it worked for him early. It helped him early. But once you get, you know, this late in the game, even, you know, the past few episodes, you got to be more willing to open it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else from rule number three, David?
Nope, we can go on to the fourth one.
Oh, you forgot the epitome of rule number three to be flexible. The Samsung FlexWash and FlexDry washer and dryer pair available at Home Depot. These innovative appliances are the first ever to allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in the same machine, just like Ty was able to play two idols at the same time. So when you do your laundry, you don't have to mix different colors and fabrics together, risking color transfer and fabric damage. FlexWash integrates a large capacity lower washer for everyday washes and an additional washer for separate colors and delicates. FlexDry integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for delicates. Both the washer and the dryer have a number of innovative features, much like Sarah's game, right? To make doing laundry easier on you and your clothes. FlexWash offers a steam wash option for removing stains and a self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. FlexDry features multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles, while SensorDry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. Both are Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to set and start the machines, receive an alert, and let you know when the load is finished. Together, FlexWash and FlexDry offers the ultimate flexibility to provide the best possible care for your clothes. That's the Samsung FlexWash and FlexDry washer-dryer pair available at Home Depot. So flexible, David. Very, very flexible. All right, let's talk about rule number four. Don't let your emotions control you. Sarah, I think, did a pretty good job here. Very stoic season, I think, for Sarah.
Yeah, to the point that I think she tweeted something out that said something to the effect of, no, really, I am fun in real life. Just ask my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, in that final tribal council, Sarah explained how she could be so close to everybody, you know, just as you were just talking about, but still emotionally detached enough to do what she needed to do in terms of the game. She tapped into skills she had as a cop when she went undercover. And, well, good for her in doing so. She managed to keep any emotion she had about the players, both good and bad, shut off almost completely. Sarah specifically told you that she knew going in she wanted to be everyone's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't going to restrict herself depending on whether she liked them or not, which, again, a textbook way of following this rule correctly. I feel like the only time Sarah allowed her emotions to get away from her a little bit was in the tribal council where Ceri tried to play Sarah's advantage. She was understandably upset and unwilling to listen to what Ceri was saying. But even then, she told you on the red carpet how she pushed the emotions aside, thought about the situation logically, and then worked with the others to orchestrate the vote against Michaela as a way to weaken Ceri and also help her own game move forward in the best possible way. Now, compare this to the way Brad played. His emotions were in full swing after Monica's visit. He became openly angry at Ty, basically trying to blackmail him the same way he claimed Michaela had tried to blackmail Brad himself into fishing. He acted like an ass in front of the jury, which is obviously a horrible move. And then when he was deciding who to bring along to the final three, he said it would come down to who had done him wrong the most. Well, no, it should come down to who would be the best for him to face at the end. And we ended up hearing that he didn't realize Sarah was so respected by the jury and thought they would be voting emotionally. But his emotional side was still controlling how he made that decision. And we know that choice may have cost him $1 million.
Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, it's an emotional choice, but also it's emotional in terms of not wanting to break the bond that, you know, we touched on the, you know, swap of the jewelry. And so, you know, for Brad, I think that the emotions of, you know, the, you know, wedding ring bond that was made, I think that's another emotion that he doesn't necessarily want to, you know, cross. He sort of like, you know, dictated. I think that everybody knows about, you know, Brad's feelings for Monica, and he's not going to do something in the game that's going to potentially, you know, do any harm to that relationship. Sure that, you know, it's not the end of the world, but I'm sure she's not going to be thrilled if Sarah threw his wedding band into the ocean. So, you know, kudos to Sarah for sort of being able to take advantage of something that she was able to perceive about Brad.
Right, right. Again, she used emotions. He had the emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So moving on to the others, you know, Ty said that he, you know, way back in week three that he was playing with his head, not his heart. I'm not sure that he was exactly able to hold very firmly to that conviction as the game progressed, but at least he had it in mind. As for the others, well, I think that Ceri and Aubrey, you know, as we've kind of said leading up to this point, they had no problems here. They both knew it was a game. They needed to do what they needed to do. And besides, you know, Aubrey couldn't get emotionally attached to people because she's used to losing all her allies one by one. So,
yeah. So nothing new for Aubrey there. All right. So then you ready to go to rule number five, David?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Pretend to be nice. Play the social game. Keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. How did our final six fare with this?
Well, if you had asked Sarah about her social game while she was still out there playing, she would have told you, well, basically what she said in the web confessional, which is that her social game was on point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can disagree. The social game that Sarah played definitely saved her in many ways. Brad was willing to take her to the final three because he thought the jury would blame her for all the blood she spilled. It never occurred to him that most of the jurors would recognize her gameplay skill, and also that some of them would still hold emotional bonds to her. Of course, the social game also earned Sarah the legacy advantage, which is what saved her at final six. Sarah said in her CBS interview that she was able to manipulate people so well because she, again, drew on her police background. In this case, it was talking to people and making them feel comfortable enough to do something against their own interests, like admitting they've committed a crime. Mm-hmm. Of course, when they do that in her police life, she turns around and locks them up. Much like in the game, she turned around and voted them out.
Mm-hmm.
That's the job. That's what Sarah did.
Yeah. So she's doing justice.
Yeah. At least from her viewpoint in the game, yes.
She's locking up the people who are breaking the survivor rules. You're breaking Bloomberg's rules.
That's
You're
right.
going to the jury. Citation. Citation
I only give
for
out
you.
Citations.
Yes.
Yeah, she locks them up.
I would.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. What about the other players, David?
So, even the other players saw it. Cerise said in interviews that Sarah was everybody's best friend. She thinks 90% of the jury said at one time or another that they trusted Sarah 100%. Nobody said that about Brad. And, Cerise also wondered, quote, and who's Troy's Ann? So she added on the red carpet that Sarah made real relationships that allowed her to flip and then come back to her old allies and say, oh, that was just a game move. That wasn't personal. And she also listened to people when they talked and used information from people's personal lives to draw them closer to her. I think that the story she told you, that Cerise told you, was how Sarah listened to Cerise talk about her family and then, talk back about, oh, yeah, your son would be so proud of you and things like that, showing that it wasn't just someone sitting there nodding along. Sarah took it all in and then used it to her advantage. And many other jurors also said the same thing about Sarah being everybody's best friend. Aubrey noted that one place where Sarah's game was even better than Tony's was where you brought it up earlier. She was able to be all these different things to different people. The little sister, the older sister, the best friend. She had all the different relationships as necessary. I mean, Tony could never be anybody's little sister.
Mm-hmm. No. nor would he want to, I don't think.
So, as Cerise said on the show, players need to relate to the others if they expect to get their votes at the end. And Sarah knew this, but Brad didn't learn this lesson, I don't think. As I mentioned earlier, Andrea said Brad never worked with or made any sort of bond or relationship with her, which is a mistake because even if you're not allies, you still need to reach out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we saw of Brad acting all kingly in the hammock of power during the finale, the more I knew there was absolutely no way he was going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The hammock of power or the hammock of doom.
Well, right. It was the hammock of the Power Six, and the Power Six were doomed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Now, with all that said, I do have to note that Aubrey called Brad the most genuine person there at one point. And that was a little earlier in the game, but that changed as his time in the game stretched on and his social game somewhat fell apart, especially when it came to how he treated Ty.
Mm-hmm.
But, speaking of Ty, I'm not sure if I should mention this here, but I can't think of where else it would fit, so I'll go ahead. And that is that Ty has a bit of a communication problem at times. We heard from other players earlier in the season, and we've seen it. Ty himself told Josh that he wasn't always able to express himself well in tribal councils. He'd form a thought in his head, but only get half of it out of his mouth. In Ty's first season, I think one thing that you mentioned was you felt Ty's ability to connect with the other players might have been affected by his somewhat broken English.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think you were right about that, because when Sandra did her post-game interviews, she said one reason she didn't talk to Ty much was she couldn't understand him half the time and didn't want to keep saying, huh, what'd you say? So, she believes that he was frequently misunderstood, and I believe it too, and I think that certainly impacted his ability to move his social game forward.
Right. I also feel like that he gets himself into some dicey situations also, which, end up involving complicated answers. And I kind of, I said this with his first game, but I do feel like that playing the game much more straightforward, I think, is a better way for him to go than to, have to double cross people. And I know we got into this in the tribal council of, hold on, is this hypocritical where everybody's mad at Ty for, the same thing everybody else is doing, but everybody else seemed to have a better ability to sort of like spin their way out of it. And I think a lot of times Ty ends up getting into a deeper hole with trying to explain what he was doing to the other people who are probably a little bit more proficient in sort of like tying him up in knots.
Tying up Ty. Right. Yes. Yeah, I agree. You know, he did say that, you know, wait, this is hypocritical. But, you know, sometimes that happens if you can't explain yourself. And we saw that Sarah was expert at explaining herself. The one thing that I wish we had gotten out of interviews was how she explained herself that first time where we saw the after the tribal council, they came back to camp and she said, anyone who wants to know, I'll explain myself. And then it cut away and we never saw that. Mm-hmm. So I would love to know what she said there. So maybe if you ever do a deeper dive with her, but
I'd love to,
you know, yeah, whatever it was she said, I think it just goes back to the fact that maybe the words themselves weren't as important as the fact that she had those emotional bonds with them still.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. David, anything else here in rule five?
Just to wrap up with Sheree and Aubrey, I think both of them did fine here, in part because neither of them really had to pretend to be nice. They're just seemingly both really nice people. And certainly neither of them lost because of having anything to do with this rule.
Okay, David. Rule six, don't be too much of a threat. Sarah, that was a nice thing she had coming into this season. Nobody thought of her as a threat.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. And as a matter of fact, Sophie said that on Know It Alls when you were out at the red carpet. Sarah was lucky enough to come into the season as one of the few people who were not viewed as a threat before the game even began. We saw the people who were considered to be threats getting knocked out one after the other. And Sarah managed to navigate through it all by keeping her head down and, well, targeting those threats around her.
Mm-hmm.
By the time any of the other players started to realize what was going on, it was close to too late. And, you know, the two who really needed to see her for the threat she was didn't catch on until, well, the final tribal council was already underway. I think Brad said he didn't realize it until Zeke got up and gave the second half of his speech. And that's when he said, oh, I have made a terrible mistake here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she did a good job of, you know, staying below the radar. Now, speaking of Brad, who I had just mentioned, he was obviously a threat. But by the time the other players turned their attention to him, he went on his immunity run and didn't give anyone a chance to get rid of him. So, you know, his clock was kind of ticking away. But by the time it struck 12 for him, nobody could do anything. He just he won all the immunity challenges.
Yeah, that's the one point to be a threat. Once you expose, yeah. Once you show you are a threat, that's a good strategy.
Right. Yeah. Then actually be one. Yes. Sheree should certainly have been viewed as a threat.
I'll give her a bell on this preemptively.
Yeah. Yeah. But because she was playing a quieter strategic game rather than being, you know, a big, bold game or a challenge threat, she was allowed to keep moving along in the game. She was recognized for the threat she posed back in Heroes versus Villains. But by the time she had to go to a tribal council this season, apparently, everyone forgot about her. Moving on to Aubrey, well, she didn't win her season, but she came into this season at the top of many minds and was treated almost like a winner and the threat that she posed by several players, including Sandra and Brad, because they thought she should have won, and that was the most recent thing that they saw before heading out to play. So there wasn't a whole lot that Aubrey could have done there to lessen her own threat other than, well, just play from the bottom, which is what she did.
Yeah, and she'll talk about that in her interview about how it was really hard for her to come in, coming right off of the Ko-Rong finale and everybody thinking a certain thing about her after just watching her season so quickly from when this game started.
Right. So, you know, I'd say that's how they all did when it came to the threats.
Okay. David, then the final rule. This is going to be the week. It's all going to pay off. Vote out the weak and then the strong and then the weak and then the strong. Did Sarah do this? She flip-flopped back and forth. Was it so she could keep voting out the strong and then the weak and then the strong again?
Well, okay. Before I answer that question, you know, there's a saying that the exception tests the rule. And this whole season has been one long exception to Rule 7, mm-hmm. as you may have noticed. So I have a game-changing announcement.
Yes.
This rule will change after this season.
Oh. Yes. Wow.
Slide to the side. Slide to the side.
We'll see if it slides to the side, but... You know, by the way, speaking of slide to the side, just to go off on a tangent here, I was sitting at a poker table and they were trying to get people to move around to square up the table. And I started telling people, slide to the side, slide to the side. And they all looked at me and I realized none of them watched Survivor.
Yeah.
And you know, it was all lost on them.
Okay. Hopefully you didn't get in a fist fight or anything.
No.
Yeah.
Not at that poker game. No.
Okay.
But
other ones?
Well, just one. Okay. Just one. But, you know, before we go ahead and change the rule, let's talk about where we were in the finale. At this point, the tribe should have been voting out the strong who threatened their chances in the end, either because of the possibility of winning immunity or winning over the jury. The immunity situation, well, that kind of took care of itself with Brad. But clearly, there were a few players who didn't vote out the strongest opponent. They misconstrued who would be more popular with the jury, and they kept Sarah around, but Sarah turned out to be the strongest of them all. So they did not vote out the strong, and they ended up losing because of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, see, the rule does have impact sometimes.
I guess so, really. We're backed into that one. David, the appendices. Do whatever it takes to get idols. What about advantages?
Well, I have another game-changing announcement for this appendix. After the increasingly important role idols and those other advantages have had, and especially after Advantage Geddon, I will be updating this piece of advice as well.
Okay.
So, yes, we will be taking into consideration advantages. Again, in the meantime, we saw just how important it could be to have an idol or an advantage. Cerie's torch was snuffed, not because of some grand plan to get rid of her, but simply because she was the only one who didn't have immunity. Now, I will say that in my opinion, this is exactly the problem with having too many advantages in the season. Cerie should not have gone out this way. But until that issue is fixed, players just need to pay very close attention at all times.
Okay. Now, Steven had said, you know, coming off of Survivor Cambodia that, you know, that you should get the advantage and then immediately flush it because it makes you a target.
Well, if it's known, I mean, there's a different thing there. Steven's advantage was known. The one Sarah had, nobody knew about. So I understand where he's coming from in that situation. But in Sarah's situation, no, keeping them to herself was certainly much better to do.
Okay.
And, you know, she twice showed how important it is to pay very close attention at all times. She found the vote steal simply by noticing it sitting, you know, on the ground there by Michaela, and then feigned a reason to swim over there and grabbed it without anyone noticing it. Then when Sierra told her about the legacy advantage, she used her social game to maneuver her way into inheriting that and, well, saving herself with it. Without that move, Sarah would have left the game in the Cerie spot. Of course, Ty also showed he knew how to find idols and also demonstrated some pretty good intelligence about it when he realized that an idol might be in the same location from one tribe to the next. So he used one clue to find two idols.
Mm-hmm.
He also gave future players advice when he spoke to you on the red carpet, saying they should just go around sticking their hands into every nook and cranny they can find.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, they might get a scorpion sting, but it's worth it to get immunity.
Yeah, he said that the scorpion sting, that the idol is more valuable than the scorpion sting.
Yeah. So I could just imagine a whole B-roll of players walking around sticking their hands into, you know, holes in trees and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Troyzan also found an idol. And he held on to it until the time when he realized he really needed it, which was kind of funny because he thought he was going to need it right away when he first found it. And then it just kind of disappeared for a while because he never needed it. So it wasn't until the immunity train that he joined that he brought that out. So, you know, good for him for finding it at that point, because that probably helped him get to the final three as well.
Mm-hmm. So good job there. On the first appendix and the second appendix, the final tribal council. Finally, we have some meat here. Now, what do you think about the new format? Did you like it, David?
I did. I did.
I did too.
I'll discuss that in, I think, a couple minutes here, because before we get to that, I want to talk about the first aspect of the jury phase, which is something we've, you know, discussed a little bit in the last few weeks, and that is to seed the jury with people who will vote for you. Earlier, I mentioned how Sarah didn't fight the vote against Zeke because she had to preserve her own game. But I think it went further than that. By letting him get sent to the jury, she ended up with a strong advocate in her favor, one who told us in Jury Speaks videos that he was absolutely lobbying all the other jurors. And I think that same consideration also came into play when it looked like Sarah was debating whether or not to force a fire-making challenge between Ty and Troyzan. A number of viewers couldn't understand why she wouldn't force the tie. Even I tweeted some thoughts in favor of forcing the fire making before thinking about it some more and realizing, no, she was actually 100% right. And I mean, this was all the audience talking about this. Even superstar poker player Daniel Negreanu, he railed against this move here. And he's a huge Survivor fan. He's a friend of Boston Rob. He helped coach a friend of the podcast, Jason Somerville. So he's not just some random schmo out there. Mm-hmm. He was saying on Twitter that voting Troyzan into a fire-making challenge was the game theory optimal thing to do. But there were a couple more issues at play here. An important one was putting Ty on the jury after the way Brad had treated him virtually guaranteed Ty would vote for Sarah. On the flip side, putting Troyzan on the jury guaranteed a vote for Brad instead.
Right.
So, you know, those were good reasons to not force
Daniel
the
was arguing that Sarah should have gone to the fire-making challenge?
That she should have voted Troyzan because he did not think that she would be able to trust them. So, yeah, basically one of his main objections was that Brad and Troyzan could have been lying to Sarah and planning to vote her out instead of Ty. So voting against Troyzan would have potentially saved her in that case. So that's what he was saying. There was no downside to it for her. And there was an upside if they were going to vote against her. But what all of us, you know, Daniel, me, everybody, were unaware of was that final three deal involving the exchange of jewelry that we discussed earlier. And also something to consider, Brad and Troyzan based their games on loyalty and trust. They promised her final three, and she knew they would do it because that was who they were in the game. There was no way they were going to risk everything, let alone Monica's wedding ring, by lying to the person who would be the final jury on her way out of the game. It just would have made no sense to be loyalty, 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 oh, except for you, and now you go to the jury and poison them against us. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the things that we were unaware of, and in particular, Negreanu was unaware of. Now, the second factor at play in the decision was, of course, another issue discussed in this appendix, which is the question of who Sarah wanted to face in the end. She had no choice about Brad, but she saw that Troyzan had basically done nothing to earn jury votes, and I'm sure she knew how most of the others felt about him. Ty, on the other hand, was generally well-liked, had little or no blood on his hands, and you know that's the same reason Brad didn't want to face Ty in the end. Additionally, from Sarah's perspective, keeping Ty around could have run the risk of splitting some anti-Brad jury votes. If people out there were just going to say, well, I'm not voting for Brad, well, if Sarah was there, she was their only option. If Sarah and Ty are there, they could split that vote. So we know what Sarah was thinking then and, you know, the moves that she made. But why did Brad and Troyzan choose to bring Sarah along? Well, Brad said in pretty much every interview that the perception watching it on TV is very different from in the game itself. From his viewpoint, first, he didn't necessarily know how much Sarah had been involved in making actual moves as opposed to Andrea and Suri. And I think part of that goes back to the fact that he wasn't willing to talk to any of those people. Maybe if he had reached out to Andrea or some of the others, he'd have known how involved Sarah was. But he stayed to his little group, so he didn't realize how involved she was. And then secondly, the moves that he did see her make got a lot of blood on her hands. While, as I just mentioned, Ty's hands were clean, he was likable, and he found idols. So from Brad's perspective, really from Brad and Troy's perspective, because they both came to the same conclusion, Ty would have been the more dangerous one to bring.
Yeah, Brad definitely felt like that everybody was going to be mad at Sarah. I mean, it was a miscalculation on his part, but that's definitely what he was thinking.
Right. you know, once they got to the jury, then they needed to be able to explain why the jurors should vote for them and not for the other ones. And, you know, as this appendix notes, sometimes it's obvious what you need to say, sometimes not. It seems to me that Sarah knew exactly what she needed to say, and she had known this for a while, whereas, as we just mentioned, Brad completely misjudged what the jury would be looking for. Well, and I don't really know what Troyzan's plan was, but I do know that Sarah had a masterful final tribal council, and the new format really helped her expand on her game even more. It was a great move on her part to bring up being undercover as a police officer, because I do think that helped explain how she could play this game as she did and still be a good person, which was a question some of the people had. I think I saw something from Andrea, and I don't remember, you know, I've viewed so much footage at this point, I don't remember if it was her Jury Speaks video or in the final tribal council itself, where she said, "I really worry about who Sarah is as a human being." And so this helped Sarah to explain, I can be both of these things. And, you know, Sarah read the jury correctly and pointed out that her time with them was personal, but voting out was the game, and she was able to separate the two. Indeed, Sarah had pushed this in tribal councils a couple times already, such as the Andrea vote, when Sarah talked about how the jury should reward gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
While Sarah was unapologetic about her gameplay, taking credit for her moves and explaining them, Brad was on the defensive much of the time. Michaela showed how Brad totally ignored and dismissed her. Andrea noted that Brad never reached out to those on the bottom and wasn't asked to Ty. And Ty himself took Brad to task about the way Brad talked down to him. Sarah certainly went into that final tribal council with the advantage. And I don't mean the legacy advantage, you know, just an overall
or
advantage.
Or a vote steal.
Right. Yeah, she didn't even have to, you know, eliminate someone from the jury. There were a few votes she was never going to get, like Debbie, who said in her Ponderosa video that whoever flipped would never get her vote at the end. And she held true to that. But others were more easily convinced, such as Haley, who said in her own Ponderosa video that a player needed to be the shot caller to get her jury vote. And I would say Sarah obviously demonstrated that.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Lewis pointed out on Twitter something that we've discussed several times, which was that her millennial versus Gen X peeps, Zeke and Michaela, respect gameplay and don't have sour grapes. And that was something Brad admitted he didn't see coming, because he obviously hadn't seen that season. He didn't know how Zeke played or how he thought. Cerie said in a Jury Speaks video that there was no way she would ever vote for Troyzan, who did nothing but hang around Brad. And she noted that Brad is a multimillionaire, something that has been discussed on podcasts before regarding what should or should not come into play. Well, she indicated that she knew it shouldn't necessarily be a consideration, but it was for her and for a number of other jurors who mentioned it, because giving Brad $1 million was not going to be nearly as meaningful as giving it to someone like Sarah or Ty if Ty had made it to the final three. So, you know, that is an interesting point, I think, because it's come up before, and I don't remember exactly when, but you wonder, should you tell people who you are? Should you tell people you have money? It does look like the jurors were considering that this time.
Mm-hmm.
As it happened, Sarah had a good enough gameplay that they didn't even have to consider it, but it could have been a consideration if Brad had faced other people there.
Yeah. And I don't know what Brad could potentially do to hide that fact. I mean, people knew who he was. It's a returning player season, so maybe in a first-time season, even in his first-time season, people knew who he was. So,
right. Maybe start out the season by saying he went bankrupt. You know,
bad news, everybody.
Yeah, I'm playing for the money.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course, then he'd have a sob story, and people would have voted him out for that. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do have to say, it's not like all of those who voted for Sarah were her biggest fans leading up to that vote,
mm-hmm.
because many of them said in the Jury Speaks videos that they were upset that they'd have to vote for Sarah because they didn't like how she made them feel, but she simply played the best game. Aubrey summed it up nicely by saying that if Tony can play that way and win as a man, Sarah shouldn't be penalized for doing the same thing as a woman, which goes along with something you have often said about mothers playing the game, becoming close with people, betraying them, and then getting roasted by the jury. This time, the jury didn't hold it against her. Now, maybe it's because it's a group of all-stars. Maybe, as Sarah has suggested, it had something to do with the name of the season, and the jury knew they really needed to vote for someone who played hard and, well, changed up the game. Either way, she handled the jury better than the attorney she was up against.
David, any final thoughts on why Sarah was the winner this season?
Well, last week I predicted, once Saree is dispatched from the game, Sarah becomes the Tony, the one who was pushing game moves, even if he felt betrayed by her. She seems to have Zeke as a cheerleader, and I think the others will join in. It's nice to get one right every once in a while, and I do think that the Survivor producers helped us all by showing a lot of what led up to Sarah's win.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah schemed and plotted like a criminal. She was incredibly flexible, never let her emotions dictate her actions, played a social game that allowed her to get to know people on a personal level and still double-cross them, avoided being seen as a threat in the season when threats were taken out in quick succession, and then wrapped it all up with a great final Tribal Council performance. She made outstanding moves and took full advantage of just about every situation. According to Jeff Probst, Brad played a game good enough to win, except that he didn't because of at least one wrong move. But that wrong move, to my mind, was surrounded by others that led him to that point. It wasn't just one bad decision to take Sarah to the end, because if he had turned on her, he would have broken his promise, which could have undercut everything he would have been saying about himself to that point. And he made other mistakes along the way. According to the reunion vote, it would have only taken one person switching away from Brad. And in the heat of the moment a year ago, who knows what really would have happened. I saw a number of comments suggesting Brad fumbled the ball just as he was approaching the goal line, but I give more credit to Sarah for knocking the ball loose. Troyzan, well, he really never gave himself a chance. He played a game that was good enough to get to the end, but just couldn't win it all. Early in the season, he said, "The last thing I want to do is get bamboozled by women again." But one woman definitely got him good. Saree and Aubrey are both great players, but they were too threatening to be allowed to the end. I guess it's possible that Saree might have found a way if she hadn't been screwed by Advantage Geddon. But as I said last week, the others would have had to be complete idiots to let her get to that point. And as for Ty, he's an incredibly nice guy who can find idols anywhere, but he still hasn't shown that he can make all the necessary strategic moves without letting his emotions get the better of him. Sarah lived up to the theme of this season by completely changing her game and being in control while still being flexible, getting to know people on a personal level while not letting her emotions dictate her actions. Overall, she did a great job. And that is why Sarah won, Saree got screwed, and Aubrey, Brad, Ty, and Troyzan lost.
Okay, there you have it. Great job this season, David Bloomberg. Outstanding work.
Thank you very much.
David, are you a hero, a hustler, or what's the other one? A
healer.
A helper? What is it?
A helper, a Hercules?
Yeah.
Oh,
hero. Yeah. Well, what are you, David?
Well, I'm probably...
Hero, right?
Probably a hero, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I could see it.
That's almost certainly what I am.
Okay. Now that Game Changers is in the rearview mirror, what do you have planned this summer?
Well, my son graduates high school next week.
Congratulations. So,
thank you.
Now, are you going to miss his graduation to go appear on reality TV?
No. I am going to be at his graduation, so he won't have to come visit me in Fiji or anything
like
that. Okay,
good job on that. David, again, thank you for all your hard work. You can follow at David Bloomberg on Twitter. Any other platforms, or are you just a Twitter mainly?
I'm on Snapchat also.
Whoa.
Although don't expect a whole lot from me there.
Who knew? David Bloomberg on Snapchat, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Total blindside.
Yeah. What are you snapping?
Not much. That's the issue. Mostly it was like, you know, my son's high school baseball games.
Yeah.
But
click, 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 click.
So now that he's done with baseball, I don't know what it'll be on there. But
you better go catch some fish or you're going home.
That's such a millennial move.
Yeah, such a millennial move, David Bloomberg.
Yeah, it was mostly, the real reason was mostly to follow you because I kept hearing about your great snaps. So
oh,
I was
yeah.
like, okay, fine, I'll join.
Yeah, that's right. Sarah is not on the Snapchat.
That's stupid. That's boring. I don't like it.
Yeah. And if you want to follow Brad on Snapchat.
Pick somebody else, people.
All right. You know what? That, believe it or not, this is a season I ended up with less sound clips than I normally have. I think on Millennials versus Gen X, like halfway through, I had to prune the soundboard. Whereas on Game Changers, I really never filled up everything in my Game Changers tab. So if you are ranking seasons by sound clips, and I think that there is some sort of like metric to that in terms of like funny character things that happen in the season, Game Changers is not high up on that criteria.
Well, we know that Millennials versus Gen X had the best sound clip ever.
Yes. Okay. Well, we don't need to revisit.
Well, fine.
Sure, right, I'll send you off for the summer with this.
David, you're right. David, you're right.
But this is getting a little sick that you're just obsessed with this clip, David.
Well, why wouldn't I be?
I don't know. I would imagine like that you would hear it so much in your real life that you wouldn't need to call into a podcast to hear it.
Yeah, you can imagine that all you want. But
okay. All right, David. Great work. Kudos also to Alex, who has been instrumental in the editing of these shows this season. Thank you, Alex Kidwell, on that. Old Reliable has been hard at work on this podcast series. Thank you to him. Thank you to you guys as well for staying with us all season long. Of course, on Tuesday, we've got a great interview. I sat down on Saturday with Aubrey Bracco. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy that. Plus, much more coming all summer long. robisawebsite.com/iTunes. Thank you again to all of our bloggers this season. Great job knocking it out of the park. Dave, do you have a hashtag for this final episode of the season?
Well, I think in honor of the way Sarah played, hashtag like a criminal.
Okay. All right. So, hashtag like a criminal. Good stuff. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.